Welcome to the Dissertation Dive, a special podcast series where we dive into dissertations of scholars who completed their doctoral degrees in the past several years. As you may know, the dissertation is a culminating experience of a doctoral journey and includes independent scholarship that is significant to our field. So I thought it'd be a great idea to dive into some outstanding dissertations. In this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Obi Atkinson, the author of the dissertation titled Exploring the Influence of U.S. High School Athletes' Perceptions of Their Coaches' Communication Constructs of Their Sport-Related Well-Being. Dr. Atkinson, thank you for joining me on the Dissertation Dive.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yes, good to have you here. I really want to dive into your dissertation, but first, can we look back a little bit just in terms of what are you up to in your career now?
Yeah, so right now I am an assistant professor at SUNY Cortland. And so right now I'm teaching a 3-3 load, sort of 7 weeks, well, I guess now more than 7 weeks, week 10. At times it feels like it's week 7, and other times it feels like it's about week 16. And so teaching 3 classes this fall, and then I'll teach 3 next spring. So we're right in the thick of it. We're sort of in our last push before final exams.
Right. Yeah. And how long have you been at Cortland?
So I started this fall, and then I previously did my PhD and my dissertation and that stuff at Ohio State University.
Okay, great. So let's back up a little bit and think about how you came to where you're at. Will you talk a little bit about your background? How did you end up pursuing a doctoral degree focused around physical education?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And the first thing I say to people is it certainly wasn't linear by any means. Originally, I grew up in a small town in southwestern Ontario, Canada, where just being reflective of my background, my parents put me in sport opportunities and a bunch of sport opportunities early on. Now, you would think that ice hockey would be the primary sport that I played, but that's the first thing my parents put me in. And 5 minutes after putting me on the rink, I locked myself in the penalty box and said it was too cold. So they said, well, ice hockey is not going to be it, and we're going to have to try some other sports. Thankfully, the next sport up was soccer, and that stuck. So I ended up just playing a range of sports as a kid. And sort of, I guess you could say, is I followed that athlete development model all the way through. And, you know, it really started with sport engagement, sport participation, learning like sort of the fundamental motor skills, sort of becoming competent, and really found that my success was primarily within soccer. And so as I worked my way up through this model, I, you know, dropped off other things like basketball or dropped off things like lacrosse, bowling, tennis. And then, you know, as I worked my way up, it, you know, started getting involved in the Canadian provincial team program, sort of had a little bit within the national program. And so it just like, you know, you keep working, and then all of a sudden it was like, okay, so now, where do you want to go for higher ed? What do you want to do in university? And I'll be honest, it was soccer scholarship. We don't have soccer scholarships in Canada. And it was like, well, you know, I want to get paid and get some money where I can play and do my school, and that schooling's paid for. And so sort of did a bunch of different tours. We really didn't know much of the process, to be frank, and just kind of reached out to some schools. And one of the schools that got back to me was a Division II school in South Carolina called Lander University. And now, while I was transitioning from sort of the provincial national programs into college, my parents started saying, well, how about you try coaching? How about you expose yourself to, you know, teaching and some of those things? My dad was a computer software engineer. I found his stuff quite boring, to be honest, but my mom was a pre-K teacher, a preschool teacher, an early childhood educator. And so whenever we would do these things as kids where my parents would take my brother or I to their work for one time in the year. And my brother loved going with my dad, and I hated it, where I love going with my mom to work because it was working with kids. I found that to be fun. And so they're like, well, get into coaching, see how you like it. And so that was sort of the plan of, well, I'll go and play. I'll play my 4 years. I'll go with physical education because that's playing and sort of learning and coaching, kind of. And so that makes the most sense. And so I ended up at Lander. And I'll never forget this moment early on when, sort of within the first year, I wasn't really playing much. It was quite frustrating. I was about 13 hours away from home and quite isolated. And I remember Dr. Gina Barton, who's one of Dr. Judy Rink's former students, just said, does it matter more if you can teach the X and O's to a select few or make as many kids as physically literate as possible? And still to this day, like, that has such a profound impact where it got me thinking, like, well, does coaching matter? And who does it matter to? And to what extent does coaching at the university level matter? And so as time went on, I became more invested in my academics. I regarded physical education now more as an academic subject and something that I could put a lot of time and commitment into, as my time and commitment shifted from soccer. Since I wasn't engaged, wasn't playing as much, had disagreements with my coach. And so then after 2 years playing, or I guess not playing, I figured, well, I might as well leave. There's no point being this far away from home. And so let's look at other programs around the U.S. that have physical education. So my dad and I are driving all the way up and through, and I don't know where we were, but I think we were looking at North Carolina, like Virginia, where I'm looking up peak programs. And first time I'm ever in West Virginia, and I've never been in the state. I just go, hey, Dad, like, Morgantown, WVU has a program. You want to stop by? Never been to this place in my life. And come to find out, 2 months later, I'm going to WVU for my undergrad. It was just unique. It was one heck of an experience. To be short with it, I had a really good program with a lot of good mentors, such as Dr. Stephen Harvey, Dr. Sean Bolger, Dr. Emily Jones. And I think the one, though, that stood out was, for me, was Steve and how he viewed physical education as sport pedagogy and this balance between what was really my interest of both coaching and teaching, and how they're different, but how they're combined, and in particular, using a games-based approach. And so then from there, graduated my undergrad and ended up at Ohio State University under Phil Ward. And so went through their Master of Sport Coaching program, learned a lot about content knowledge, particular common, specialized, and pedagogical. And then, again, talking sort of about this non-linear track is, got the sort of Willy Wonka's golden ticket for a graduate assistantship. It stayed for both my master's and my PhD. And 2 weeks into my PhD, I changed directions again. I was under Phil, but I just thought it was not the best fit for me and the direction I wanted to go. I wanted to go less physical education and a bit more bigger, broader, more youth development. And so 2 weeks into my PhD, I had a meeting with Jackie Goodway and Sue Sutherland and just said, I don't think working with Dr. Ward is the best fit for right now. And so all of a sudden then changes, and I'm under both Jackie and Sue. And then later on, Dr. Anderson Butcher comes on, and that's sort of this weird pattern and a non-linear way to where I am now.
Yeah. I you know, everybody has a unique story to get to where we're at in this, you know, in this academic world of getting a PhD or an EdD. And so you certainly are unique as well, all the way back to, I love the story about the penalty box. I was thinking it'd be too cold in the penalty box, so I hope you didn't hang out in there for too long. So you're at Ohio State, you've had some great exposure or experience at West Virginia. And after a couple of years of study, you got to think about your research interests and, you know, what are you going to study to propose a dissertation? What were a few of the most influential things that led to your selection of a research topic?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I go back to this whole notion that as much as I'd like to say it was linear, it wasn't. I think there was some parts of it where my preparation in terms of my undergrad and master's really centered on teacher and coach, learning, education, and application. But then when I switched and went under Jackie Goodway, Sue Sutherland, Don Anderson Butcher, it was really centered more around these principles around youth development and well-being and some of these bigger, larger contextual factors. And you know, they really pushed me in this question of, yes, we train teachers. Yes, we educate our coaches. Yes, we want to see how they're learning. But who ultimately does their education, learning, and application affect? And that's the students and that's the kids or the youth that are on in PE or in youth sport. And so then it really started to have me think, well, yes, we want to educate. We know what effective teaching or coaching is and sort of these principles that drive it. But who ultimately does it impact? And so I think by changing my lens is it almost then it became more complex and almost more twofold, where what are these predictors to some of these youth outcomes that we want from quality PE or effective youth sport? And we know that the teacher or the coach is one of those primary key social agents that dictates a lot of those experiences for them. And so that's how it really got shaped. It wasn't an overnight thing. I didn't come through knowing exactly what I wanted, but I think it was almost carved before the horse in some way, where it was centered on the coach and the teacher, but then it came out of, well, let's start with athlete outcomes and work our way backwards to looking at the coach and the teacher as a social agent.
Interesting. So let's dive into your dissertation a little bit more specifically. Tell us a little bit about the research questions and what you hope to learn about from this study.
It started off really big, where this construct around athlete well-being. And What was interesting about it is when I started to really get into the literature was how messy the construct of athlete well-being actually is and how ill-defined or some of these constructs that make it up. And I came across this paper that really started getting at, well, we should start looking at athlete well-being from both a contextual level and more a holistic level. And so like from a holistic standpoint, things like human flourishing, life satisfaction, right? They're these bigger, broader, more up in the cloud constructs where something related to the sport-related context would be athlete's burnout or athlete enjoyment. Things that are a little bit more representative towards their sport experience rather than these bigger, broader, more holistic constructs. And so then what I wanted to start to do was figure out, okay, well, what within that do we know influences and what do we not know so far or don't have a good understanding of what influences some of these, what we'll call sport-related constructs of well-being? Mm-hmm. What from the coach or from a teacher, what's in the literature that we know influences and doesn't influence things like burnout or enjoyment? And what amazed me was how we tend to, and maybe it shouldn't be much of a surprise, but how much we tend to study the same things over and over and over and over again, because I think they may have nice frameworks. And I'll give a good example. So let's just take the theory of self-determination theory, right? It's a motivational theory. I think it's a nice, clean theory in some ways. I think a lot of folks tend to use it. It's a motivation-based theory, but there's been a lot of work on how SDT and motivation and sort of competence, autonomy, and relatedness influence athlete well-being. Mm-hmm. Now, the downside to that is well, what does that actually look like from the coach? And some studies did a really good job defining it. Others maybe not so much. But then it was what was on the flip side was something like coach communication has rarely been studied. Now, there's been a lot of work on the coach-athlete relationship in terms of some bigger constructs like co-orientation or closeness. But what about communication? Because that plays a major role. Just in reflecting upon my own experience, my relationship with my coaches or my relationship with my physical education teachers were much better when it was open lines of communication, when I could talk to them as a person first, when they were honest to me, but not so brutally honest that it was damaging to my own well-being. And that's both verbal and nonverbal. But what was fascinating was there really wasn't much out there. And so I take that to my advisors and they go, great, create a model. What? Like, what do you mean, create a model? Well, you got this construct well-being. You got this construct coach communication. Go create a model. And so, I mean, I know it's a podcast, but I'd love to show all like how it started to where it's gone. And just this conceptual model of, I'll be honest, it was like throwing the kitchen sink there, the first model. It was, oh, well, this matters. I think this is good. This. Okay, I think I got some idea. I took it, and they're just like, yeah, okay, explain everything here. And I go, yeah, okay, let me go back to the drawing board. And so, you know, then you start and shape and refine, and you start pulling out constructs. And so you start crafting this model around how both perceptions from the coach and the athlete, from the coach and the athlete, their perceptions of coach communication can act as sort of that mediation or the mediator between their communication, the coach's communication, and athletes' well-being or sport-related constructs of well-being. And so after then, it was, okay, well, it kind of led to a couple of different things. Was one, let's test this conceptual model as a statistical model. And then also two, let's examine the strength or the pattern, the strengths of the relationships between the models. So looking at things like athletes' perceptions of their coach's communication on burnout, athletes' perceptions of their communication as mediated by perceptions of sport competence on their enjoyment. And so just testing all these relationships in this, again, what was a very complex model, but a simplified model, and seeing how this conceptual model held up from a statistical standpoint. And so in terms of diving in at the specific constructs, we looked at one instructional communication, which was coaches' feedback, which there's been a lot of research on in over the last 40 years, primarily around how does a coach provide feedback to improve athletes' performance. And then we looked at three more interpersonal types of communication, which are really sort of in an informal way, these soft skills. And so we looked at pro-social power, which is the ability of a coach to influence decisions through their own behaviors. Social support, which is really just being there and being present. And then confirmation, which is coaches' ability to reinforce their own athletes' abilities in both verbal and nonverbal methods. And then, so we looked at those four coach communication constructs, and then the two sport-related athlete well-being constructs, we looked at burnout and enjoyment, so since those had been studied the most within the literature. And so those were really the two sort of sub-constructs from these bigger ones that we looked at. And again, just exploring those patterns and the strength of those relationships.
Wow. So you obviously did, you know, a deep dive into literature and had that as a strong foundation for your study. and you develop this model, that must be, I'm going to use the word fun, for the dissertation. I'm sure there are days where you would use other words to describe it. And you're right, we can't share that visually on the podcast, but it's in your dissertation. I was looking at it as you talk and found that useful. So listeners can certainly pull up your document to learn more about that. And so you then would have to think about methods and how do you go out and collect some information about this. You know, I think it's a quantitative study design. How did you go about methods in terms of your participants and data collection, and what were some of the things you experienced in that process?
Yeah, it was I think the big question that came at was to do this. Originally, when I was going through, and again, I think this is to do with my committee strengths. And at the time, you look at someone like Dr. Goodway and her strengths, and where she's had a lot of work with is interventions, using her SCIP intervention, where Dr. Sutherland, extremely qualitative and has done a lot of rigorous qualitative studies, whereas Dr. Anderson Butcher is surveys, big sample size. How does that work using things like structural equation modeling? And so what was really interesting was being at that table where, you know, as most people and most doctoral students probably understand this, is hearing and everyone trying to get their little bit of say in their poll in which way, well, I think you should go this way. I think you should add this in. Maybe we tried mixed methods. And I think just it came down to this point of, okay, well, what's realistic for the timeline at hand? And then the other big question was, well, who are my participants? Because there's a big difference between athletes embedded sort of within the interscholastic system versus club sport athletes who are sort of where I was along that provincial or national sort of athlete development model pathway. And what was interesting was, is right before my dissertation, I ended up doing along my colleagues here, was we met coach training amongst all 50 states in America. And we looked at what the policies were and what was required for every high school coach in every state. And what was really surprising was the prioritization of physical health and safety, and the fact that coaches really were not trained on sport pedagogy related topics such as coach communication. And so that had me drive as, well, these findings can actually influence a little bit of that education. And so that led me down, in addition to, I think we had a bit better established relationships working in schools, being within physical education and some of the school districts we use, to working with high school athletes using survey data, running SEM to then test this model. And so I guess it was really, in a sense, almost like a domino effect. Now, at the same time, going into it, I didn't really know much about SEM. I had to learn that on the spot. I was super thankful for other of my mentors, such as Dr. Sam Bates and Dr. Tony Amoros. And they were just like super helpful. And how do you get like a CSV file? How do you put that in? How do you run that in M+? And I wouldn't have been able to do that without them. But it was just then now starting to realize, okay, well, how do I get these participants in, as most people know, within dissertation within 3 months? If I didn't get my power set or my size to meet my power, like, it's not like I could move it back 3 months. And so I think that was, okay, well, what makes the most sense here? I know we have established connections. Let's get high school athletes. Let's do it from their perception so that I have a large enough end sample and I can get out to schools regularly and get the kids to sign informed consent, to take the survey and all that good stuff.
So I've noticed in my experience doing my own dissertation, advising several dissertations, the data collection process, it just never goes as smoothly as you would think. What was that like for you? What was the messiness of your data collection process like?
Yeah, so I just think in terms of the structure, it was very structured, but there are a lot of steps. It's funny. I had a chance during my PhD to talk with Paul Shemp while he was visiting Columbus one time, and he's like, "Yeah, me and Tom McKenzie would just walk into schools and get data," and I'm like, "I wish," like that's just not reality. And so mine really was a 7-step process. It was to get, school district approval, then to get permission from ADs or principals, then to contact the head coach to get a 2 dates, one to come out to then explain the study, give informed consent out or parent permission to all the student athletes, then trust high school student athletes to return to sign form by mom and dad or a guardian the following next visit, to then return and go get the signed or the signed informed consent to then ask them to then have them complete the survey on the spot in paper and pencil. And so it was a very structured process, but I mean, there were just times where, you have a date set up with a coach, you'd arrive on the campus and all of a sudden there's no team there. Emailing the coach like, "Hey coach, I'm here." And he's like, "Ah, I'm so sorry. We moved practice earlier today." And you're like, "Okay, let's find another date." it's those things that it truly is a grind, I think is the best way to put it.
Yeah. It's stressful too. As a doctoral student, the difference between that and when you kind of go off into your career as a scholar, you feel like you only got one shot at it in your dissertation. There's that end date there. And so, like you said, that team doesn't show up for practice and you might just feel like the world's out to get you, because now you can't collect your data and, your timeline's messed up and that sort of thing. So, of course you learn that that's the reality of the work and things are going to be fine, but, those are difficult circumstances in that journey, aren't they?
Yeah. And it was just like, I think what's interesting is how much the coach played a big role within it. And I knew they would play a role, but I didn't realize how big of a role. So for an example, like one of the volleyball coaches that I had as, I was able to do their whole program. But actually, let me back up. So like a normal high school football team, entire program, varsity, JV, freshman, at a big school, you're probably looking at anywhere of 100 to about 130 students involved. So all of a sudden, I run my power analysis before, and my magic number was 241, and I'm going, great, if I get 50%, which again, I know is high, but if I get a football team and a couple of them, I could be in a real good spot. Follow up and I'm getting 10. Right? And you're like, oh, come on. Like there's so much potential. But then you get a coach who, this is sort of where I come back around to it, is in volleyball, she was actually doing her PhD at the same time. She's like, I know what you're going through. I value this stuff. I think what you're doing is really interesting. I'm going to actually embed this and sort of talk about it a little bit more and tie it back in to my communication styles and how I like communicating, what their preferences are. We're going to sort of make it as team homework. And all of a sudden you have a volleyball program that has only varsity and junior varsity and 50 kids, but 42 of those kids are taking the survey. And so it was really fascinating how much the coach and what their opinions of the study and how they could relate and tie it back into their own made an absolute difference.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got all this data eventually. It must have worked out because you have your degree. I've seen your dissertation. But you get all that data in. How did you go about making sense of it? What did that process of analysis look like for you?
Yeah, so I completed the data count and around, it would have been about this time last year. And so it was like 3 intense months. And the first thing, and I'll take sort of a good phrase from Dr. Anderson Butcher, is You just have to sit and play with your data. And you have to get to know your data. You have to just run a bunch of things, see what there is, look at means, run regressions, run correlations, and just play around with it. And so fortunately, that's what I was able to do. And from the end of data collection in first week of November till about the rest of the semester, so started winter break, that's all I did, was I just played with my data. Cleaned up, made, you know, obviously a good data set, but just in SPSS, even though I knew I was running structural equation modeling through M+, just in SPSS, I just sat and played with my data and just got really familiar with, well, what are my numbers like? You know, how is my spread? So for example, I had a lot more, which it's kind of in, we'll sort of circle back on the findings, but I had many more female student athletes than male student athletes. Okay, but I had an even distribution of freshman through senior. I had a couple more, like a 2/3 were varsity as compared to 1/3 JV, and start seeing some of these trends within the data and just start looking at even just descriptive statistics. And so I think from a simplicity standpoint was I was able to, again, just sit in and spend time with my data and just pulling up some things that I saw from that, even again, just mean scores, some basic correlations, what do things look like?
Mm-hmm. So what did you find? What were some of the most important findings or some of the most interesting takeaways that you found once you got into that data?
Yeah, so what was interesting was just even looking at some of the mean scores is that coach feedback was actually reported to be the highest rated by the athletes. And so athletes, what they to put that in other words, is athletes perceived their coach to be best at providing feedback that was useful. On the other hand, athletes reported their coach's ability to give pro-social power, confirmation, and social support to be much less. And that's just in terms of the mean scores. In around looking at their burnout enjoyment, kind of moderate. For burnout, it was about 2.55, which on a scale of 5, usually 3 indicates burnout. So moderately burned out. Enjoyment was pretty high, though. And then what was interesting is I was able to break down how they perceived their burnout and their coach communication by their by some subgroups. So looking at competition level from varsity as compared to JV as compared to freshman, grade freshman and sophomore as compared to juniors and seniors, and then as well as athlete gender, so male athletes as compared to female athletes. And now what was really interesting was there was no significant differences among competition level for both burnout and how they viewed their coach's communication. And so regardless of whether a coach was at varsity, junior varsity, their athletes really didn't perceive them to be any different in their ability to communicate or their levels of burnout. Now, where we started to see significant differences was both among athlete grade. And so where we saw this big was burnout, which junior and senior athletes were more burned out than freshman and sophomore, which makes sense. I think as kids start to get into, again, we know that transitions. So middle to high school, elementary to middle, high school to college, those are stressful moments, right? The question is, well, what's next? What are you going to do? Or maybe it's, hey, I don't value this sport as much. I actually like working and making money or spending time with my friends. And so that made a lot of sense. The other one that was really interesting was how females reported themselves to be much more burned out than male athletes. And I think what's interesting about this too is my sample that I had was team sport athletes in fall and winter team sports. And so things like soccer, things like basketball, hockey, field hockey, or ice hockey, field hockey, things like that. And so I think what was interesting is a lot of those team sports Right. They're really complex in a lot of senses, where a lot of them are tend to be really constructed in a sense where they may not be necessarily more open in a way where something like cross country is, where it's more participation based, and there are these sort of benchmarks that need to happen. There's sort of this the competitive aspect is much different. And then what also was interesting was that significant differences based on coaches' confirmation and social support, where males rated their coaches' ability to provide confirmation and social support a lot higher than female athletes. The other interesting part of this is that all my male athletes, student athletes, were coached by male coaches, where female athletes, 50% were coached by males and 50% were coached by females, which is interesting in itself. And so when we took a deep dive then and just looked at the communication from, and what we did then, it was from then after the subgroups, we ran through a regression and we looked at some of these contextual factors like competition level, athlete gender, coach gender and athlete grade, and that significantly predicted 7% of the variance in athlete burnout. And then we added in those four coach communication constructs, so feedback, pro-social power, confirmation, social support, and that actually predicted then 42% of the variance in athlete burnout. And so there was a 35% change in the variance after adding those four coach communication constructs in. So then taking that all together, we said, right, clearly coach communication matters, and clearly there's some gender differences, and athlete gender remained a significant predictor in that hierarchical regression where we added the, it was the only one of the contextual factors that remained a significant predictor. So we separated it. We separated by both female athletes and male athletes. And what was interesting was, is for male athletes, that overall regression model predicted 22% of the variance in athlete burnout, whereas for females, it predicted 44% of the variance in athlete burnout. So double what it was for male athletes. We took it one step further. We said, let's look at what it looks for female athletes who are coached by a female coach as compared to a male coach. It jumped up even more for the female athletes coached by male coaches. The takeaway? I'm not really sure how much male coaches know how to communicate with female athletes in terms of limiting athlete burnout. And so it's something that definitely future research needs to take a look at, is these relationships among, well, how are these male coaches communicating with female athletes, and what are some of their assumptions as to why maybe female athletes participate in high school sports? So that was one of the big ones in terms of some of the patterns, the strengths. In terms of the SEM and running the model, what was kind of interesting is that there was initial statistical evidence to support the pathways and the relationships in the conceptual model. When we looked at the conceptual model, the big ones that were added was looking at how perceived sport competence and perceived social competence acted also as mediators to the direct relationship between athletes' perceptions of their coaches' communication and athlete burnout. And what we found was interesting is that coach communication significantly predicted athletes perceive sport competence and athletes social competence. And so what that tells us is that how a coach communicates can both increase athletes perceived confidence of, hey, I know I can play and I have good ability. I feel confident in myself. Like I perceive my skills to be worthy of participating. What also tells us is things around perceived social competence, like teamwork, ability to be a good teammate. I can, you know, sort of go through adversity, some of these other things. But then what was interesting was athletes perceive sport confidence significantly predicted athletes' enjoyment in sport, whereas athletes' perceived social competence did not significantly predict athletes' enjoyment in sport. And so what we kind of came to this conclusion was there's something else going on there. And that something else might be team dynamics, team cohesion. Because teammates play, especially when we're looking at team sport athletes, a massive role, or have the potential to play a massive role in how social competence is constructed. And so you might be a good teammate, but if your athletes aren't, and there's sort of this negative environment around them, then you might not enjoy your sport. And so we really started seeing and getting at, well, there might be more that's going on in that relationship, again, for future research. So those are some big sort of broad findings from my dissertation.
Wow. Clearly an interesting dissertation. You seem to ask questions that were on the cutting edge and moves, you know, the field forward. I think that's what we want to see from dissertation studies. I think we'll follow up on a couple of those things before we wrap up here. But as you reflect back on this process, you know, if you had to do it all over again, what would you change, or would you do anything different with the hindsight that you have now?
Yeah, so I'll be honest. I think during it, I said, why didn't I decide to make this simpler? Why didn't I decide to maybe align this or align my dissertation to something that my advisors are doing? And so I think that was unique in itself, where coach communication really wasn't a strength of any of my advisors. It wasn't one of their lines of inquiry, lines of research. And so it was learning for me, but learning for them and learning together, which was challenging at times. It was difficult at times. It was me telling them what I'm finding and then taking through that. And now that sort of sport-related well-being, youth development, they knew that, but how's that communication research and what are those connections? And so I think during it, as said, it was why didn't I just go something that made more sense and aligned? But now upon reflecting, I really went to change a thing in a lot of senses, because it pushed me to get to know another literature, maybe that I knew enough to be deadly, but didn't know well enough. And so it was in terms of learning, in terms of that process, I think I learned the most as if I were to have just taken another arm or another leg or something like that, or aligned it. I don't know if my learning would have been as great. And so I came away from it not only, you know, learning how to go recruit and get my own sample, and a very challenging sample to get, but how to play sort of more within my own data set to then run a whole new statistical method in SEM that I didn't have any prior experience with, to then really look at it and go, okay, yes, these are the findings, but how does this relate back to the bigger picture of coach behaviors, and how does that then influence outcomes within youth sport that we know would keep kids more engaged within youth sport? And so sort of being reflective in it all, short answer would be I wouldn't have changed anything. It was challenging, but I think that now being done and being reflective on those challenges was super beneficial.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm thinking about how's the dissertation impacted your career so far. I know you're a teacher educator, so maybe it's playing out there and you're early in your career, but I suspect you're probably thinking about publications, perhaps follow-up studies. How's this playing out for you right now?
Yeah, so I think the first step is trying to, I guess first is I should preface, like, my dissertation format was a little bit different. And if folks go and find it, they'll notice that is it doesn't follow the standard 5-chapter dissertation, where it does a chapter one, a typical introduction. Then chapter two is really how this, it's a paper on how this conceptual model was constructed, which then goes into chapter three, which is a traditional methods. But then chapter four is part of my findings. Chapter five is the SEM and the other part of my findings, both as papers. And then six is a discussion around similarities or big findings or coming together discussion points across all three papers. And so first and foremost, I think it's working to get those papers out. But the other nice thing or what I think my path is leading forward is, well, what's the next part of the model, the conceptual model that I want to dig into? And so a couple of things that I would love to go down is just looking at how other populations of sport perceive coach communication. I mean, I'll be honest, like, this was in high school athletics. It's, you know, does that differ for club sport or AAU basketball? Most of my sample was white Caucasian. Is these perceptions of coach communication the same for those in other populations, other ethnicities? I said earlier, my population tend to be more females than males. Can I find a way to get a more equal sample size? The other one that's kind of interesting is what I, because it was limited to my dissertation, 3 months, had to get as many as I could. I only could get the survey to complete once by the athletes. Well, I can guarantee you that students, athletes' perceptions of their coaches' communication before the season was probably a little bit more positive than if I collected data the 2 days after they lost in the state tournament. So I would have loved to get multiple snapshots and make it a little bit more longitudinal in a sense of athletes' own perceptions of their coaches' communication. How did those change after certain events? And I think the other one too is when we look at these constructs, these big constructs of coach communication and also sport-related well-being is, I only pick 4 communication constructs and 2 sport-related well-being constructs. These constructs are massive. There's so many ways that you could measure it. Give an example. I chose 1 instructional coach communication and 3 interpersonal. There's things that are more organizational. There's things that are more team-based. I didn't even look at nonverbal styles of communication, like body language, facial expressions, you know, all those type of things that could be really influential to what's going on and how athletes perceive it. And so little things like that, I think that's the next steps, is there are so many other parts of the model that really could be explored. I mean, even just looking at how athletes perceive their coaches' communication and how coaches perceive their communication and what's that alignment between both. My guess is that, well, if they're more aligned, then it's probably going to be less burnout. But who knows? That's something that I'd love to figure out a little bit more down the road.
Yeah. So a lot to follow up on. Do you intend to continue this line of research? Are you, you know, figuring out how to fit that into your new role now?
I think so. I like where it goes. I like how it's narrow but open at the same time. I think what's challenging right now is the connections, as being a first year faculty, is still getting to know coaches in the community, coaches in the schools. And so that in itself takes a little bit of time. The upside being at SUNY Cortland is we have a lot of alumni around the state. And so I'll definitely be tapping into those resources. I think where this goes certainly plays a role in my future research agenda. Whether it stays with only athletes and their coach, or, you know, we modify it to get within teachers and students or professors and undergrads, that I'm not sure yet, but certainly something to play with.
Yeah. So as we start to kind of wrap up here, you've done a really nice dissertation. It's available in the thesis and dissertation database if anyone would like to look at it. There's probably people out there right now who find this interesting, but maybe are struggling with their dissertation or figuring out whether it's right for them. What advice would you give someone who's thinking about following this path right now?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think there's a couple of things. Is first and foremost, like, block time out. And time is the hardest thing because you're going to get dragged in a lot of places, but really have high intense times and block those times out. So whether it's 2 hours where, you know, you're, whether it's, or you spend, go book out a hotel in another city and just not far away, but be there and just cram out sessions and sort of, I would say, be really purposeful about planning. The other thing that I would say is when you go into meetings with advisors, is they have a lot of stuff going on as well. And I think that's hard sometimes. And now being a faculty, I even within 10 weeks of it, I see it now where although you're front and center to your own stuff, it's really hard when they have other people and other things going on. And it is frustrating when you go into a meeting and it doesn't kick off with where you left off. And so whether that method is sending them a list of reminders the day before of, hey, this is where we were, this is what I want to talk about, so a meeting agenda, whether it is, you know, just your, whatever your method is, I think it's understanding that and not getting too frustrated. I'm not saying don't get it, because you're always going to get frustrated, but is that there are so many other things going on, and juggling that process is challenging for your advisors, even though you might say, oh, come on, I'm so close to being done. It's just another more couple of hoops to get through. And then the last one that I would say is, don't be afraid to take a step away from it at times. And what I mean by a step away is whether that's a weekend where you go do something and you don't look at it, whether it's you spend all night and then you spend the next 3 weekdays not looking at it, being able to come back to your work, having not thought about it for a while, helps you be a critical or critique your own work a lot better.
That's fantastic advice for certainly people looking at a dissertation, but perhaps even, you know, folks like myself who are just juggling projects or whatever you might be facing in your teaching, scholarship, and community engagement. It's been really nice talking with you today about your dissertation. Is there anything else about you or your work that you want folks to know before we wrap up here today?
No, I mean, at the end of the day, you can reach me, super responsive by email. That should be on the SUNY Cortland page. If anyone wants to follow up or has any, you know, want to join on any projects, as I said, there's a bunch of different ways we can go with it. And, you know, I would just love to chat more about it. I'm super passionate about this area. I think it sort of covers the sport pedagogy lens of both teaching and coaching effectiveness. And you know, again, as I said, I'm super passionate about it and would love for anyone who else is passionate about this area to reach out and follow up with me.
Yeah, well, congrats to you on a successful dissertation. I look forward to seeing where you go with this and crossing paths on the professional circuit in the years to come. And thank you for joining us on the Dissertation Dive.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.